Hi, this is Jack Vaughn. I'm from Search Data Management, and I'm joined by Ed Scannell, the Senior Executive Editor for TechTarget Sites in the Data Center and Virtualization Media Group. And we are in turn joined by Mike Magid, who's Principal Analyst, founder with Small World Big Data. It's a consultancy that takes a close look at a number of the things that are near and dear to our hearts, me and Ed and others. We're going to take a look at the year that just passed in this podcast. We're glad you could join us for it. And especially looking at the year in terms of open source, cloud, and IT, and sort of with the prism of some mergers. So, Mike, thanks for being with us here today.
No, thanks, Jack.
I'd like to start off with the IBM Red Hat purchase. That was sort of a mega deal, and it kind of caught people by surprise. So, what drove it, and what are the how may it evolve? What could go wrong? What promise does it hold?
I know at first it seems like a strange thing that you're going to have IBM, which has been such a proprietary company for so long, buy essentially the foundational open source company. But then you step back and you say, look, Red Hat's been reasonably successful with open source as a business model, and IBM has been trying to, with their cloud and other acquisitions, become that hybrid player built upon open source as a foundation. And this makes sense when you start stepping back and looking at it there. Plus, Red Hat Enterprise Linux is a core Linux for a lot of enterprises. A lot of the software IBM's getting into, it seems, is good both on-premise and in their cloud, thus getting back to that hybrid layer. Whereas you look at some other players like Amazon, and a lot of their technologies are really pretty much cloud-side lock-in. So that, I think, is really where IBM was going, was saying, we want to create a consistent technology base. It's got to be open source underneath for cost reasons, and bring people from their enterprises up into our cloud and have them have an equal experience.
Okay. Ed, so, you're a longtime IBM watcher, and how do you view...
Well, it wasn't shocking that they bought them exactly. A little surprising, I suppose. It was the second largest deal in terms of dollar value ever, $34 billion, only second to the Dell EMC deal, which was $67 billion a few years ago. IBM is no stranger to open source. I mean, they began their first investments in that with the Eclipse project back in 2001. $40 million went into that, and they put a lot of effort into that. A lot of code was put out there by them for to the open source community, and they've been a pretty consistent contributor to open source. They've got a good understanding of what it is and what they want to do with it. I think they bought the Red Hat to give themselves a better chance at winning contracts in the larger commercial and government agencies. I think that especially within the federal government, they're gravitating more and more towards open source. And one example of that is the JEDI contract, which they've bid on. It looks like AWS might win that contract, but in talking to people just this week, vendors and one user who said that he doubts AWS is going to make this a single vendor contract, that they're going to subcontract out some of the parts of the contract to a second source. It won't be Google who's backed out. It won't be Microsoft who's backed out. That leaves IBM, and I think they've still got a shot at that.
There's a company, Oracle, I think.
Oracle.
Well, there's that lawsuit they're just filing.
You're right.
Things on.
You're right. Forgot about Oracle. They filed a suit this week.
Yes, they... Trying to make sure you don't forget them. They did file a suit.
Well, they don't have a particularly strong cloud story, I think, on this thing. The JEDI contract is a $10 billion contract for, you know, cloud.
But is this really a cloud play, or is are these two companies, Red Hat and IBM, trying to get into cloud through the back door or something? Neither of them is really established yet that they're a cloud player on the par with Amazon. Mike?
Yeah, they certainly want to be. You know, I think there is a lot of jealousy on the parts of the players that aren't Amazon, looking at, hey, just how far behind they got behind the stick when everyone said, hey, we're on these cloud journeys, and they held back and said, well, we still have servers, we still have on-prem software, we still have all these these weighty things, and you know, it's a little bit of a catch-up game when you look at the percentage of who dominates the market in the cloud. So they're doing everything they can. I mean, Ed, you brought up Microsoft and Azure Stack the other day, right? That seems to be an on-ramp for Microsoft to get people to move into their cloud more so than, hey, let's take another look at another level of technology from Microsoft. I think IBM's getting these open source companies in order. They're getting a lot of software-defined things in order, again, to create a consistent developer environment, both on-prem and in the cloud, using some of their technology chops. So,
looking at the bigger trends that could arguably be coming into play here, I think that we see IT under some stress.
IT shops are getting a lot more pressure to be more competitive with application development. I think the pace of application development that needs to quicken, the C-suite is telling them that, and so I think they have marching orders to do that at IT, and I think what's very convenient for them right now is the fact that cloud and open source are marching closer together, and I think that's a low cost and easier, faster way to develop applications. I think IBM sees this among their largest accounts. AWS, of course, sees that, probably Microsoft too. So I think that it's kind of a natural fit, a convenient fit, I think, for a lot of IT shops to get more competitive with web-based applications.
You bring up Microsoft, and it was earlier in the year, but also sort of a mega deal was Microsoft buying GitHub. And Mike, can you characterize or put that in a context, or in considering what we've just been talking about?
Well, clearly there's competition for the developer's hearts and minds, right? And get the DevOps people leaning in your direction. You couldn't pick a better sort of center of the universe for that than GitHub. Everybody uses Git for version control and sharing data and apps and everything else in that whole DevOps world. So, you know, Microsoft sort of folding it in, that actually scared a lot of people in the open source community at first, like what's going on there. But you know, I think generally it's pretty good to have a much larger company behind something that's so central to what's going on. You know, whether that pays off for Microsoft in the end and bringing people into Azure versus having them go somewhere else, I think is a little bit remains to be seen.
And key to both those deals, IBM and Microsoft both, is that both those companies, proprietary companies, getting into the open source. Microsoft also, by the way, has been committed to open source the last 4 years with Satya Nadella's arrival there. But in each case, they're going to have to let those assets breathe on their own. They can't try to force fit their corporate culture too much on top of that. That's going to be key to, I think, these things working. And as you said, you already referenced the fact that some users are getting nervous about IBM, at least, haven't heard too much about Microsoft, but IBM kind of yanking things in the open source world their way.
Mm-hmm. Right, and we have an interesting number of things going on that we're not even talking about that those companies all have. You know, Linux, for example, sort of eating the world of operating systems, and Unix, I think the death knell is on the table right now. Didn't we hear that this week, that one of the last supported versions of Unix is slated for obsolescence, and it's all Linux. Now, to me, Linux is Unix, Unix enough that I'm not crying terribly much. But there are a lot of people out there who are, you know, saluting and watching the flag lower here on Unix itself. So, I think as things commoditize and become open source, as Linux does, that the players, the big players, it behooves them to bring those into their fold and build solutions on top of those and sort of control that base, even if it is open source. I think Azure is primarily going that Penguin route. They're primarily running some variants of Linux. I think you see things like Ubuntu from Canonical really taking over IoT and penetrating a lot of clouds. I think you'll see a reprise of RHEL from Red Hat as IBM rolls that back across their base in a stronger fashion. And the CentOS and the other variants that come off RHEL back into their cloud side, I'm sure. So, you know, I think Linux is sort of dominating, but again, it's becoming a commodity layer more than a differentiating layer.
And what have you seen with RHEL since the purchase?
RHEL 8 is in beta, finally. People have been waiting for that for about 2 years. I don't know, frankly, why it took them so long. to get that out there, but it is out there now in beta. I don't think it's going to be released until well into next year sometime.
Mike, the cloud, we hear a lot about serverless and operating systems fading away and so forth. And what kind of architecture changes is Amazon driving, the other cloud providers driving, and how is that changing what we might expect next year?
Yeah, there's definitely a disruptive possibility with serverless, and it's really a bad name because obviously there's still a server somewhere, but what it really means to you as an application person or business person is that you don't run a server anymore, not a physical server, not a virtual server, not a container server. You're out of operations completely if you really adopt this serverless mindset and you toss your code and push your code up through something like GitHub, but you push it up into Amazon Lambda service or the equivalent at Google, and even IBM runs a version of OpenWhisk over there. The real interesting thing with serverless is if you really follow that down and say, I'm just going to push code and not run operations anymore, and I'm going to outsource basically to a cloud provider my entire operational platform, it really frees up the IT staff. And when I say free, it's not necessarily a good word for people who might depend on operations as their income, but it really frees up the resources to focus more on just the business value. And I think serverless does have some promise there.
Okay. We covered a lot of ground looking at some big mega mergers, Microsoft and GitHub, IBM and Red Hat. It didn't happen this year, but I was wondering if either or both of you could give a little thought to EMC and Dell, which was the bigger purchase in the preceded time. If you want to pass, that's okay. I can add that.
Just generally speaking, I think it's gone well. I mean, I'm watching. They seem to be well in sync with each other. The VMware part of that deal, which I thought is really the most important value add for Dell. I think Dell and VMware, they're kind of edging a little bit closer. Some people in VMware were really uncomfortable with Dell. They were afraid of what Dell might come in. And at least in public statements, Michael Dell and Mr. Gelsinger seem to be more in sync with each other. I think things are lining up pretty well for them. I think they're now pretty much the largest IT company out there in terms of revenue. They just surpassed, I think, IBM.
We were worried. I was more concerned about how Dell would fold in the EMC sort of large corporate enterprise attack. But they've kept the firewalls up pretty well there. I agree that each
the firewalls meaning
between the cultures and the sales forces, yeah, and the approaches such that it hasn't really been the interference pattern that we might have suspected. Mm-hmm. They've really kept those running as different subsidiaries. And
how important is software-defined networks? I think HPE, which I might as well mention since we're talking about everybody, mm-hmm, has made a purchase this year in that regard. Is that orthogonal to our discussion here when you talk about serverless?
No, it's not orthogonal if you look at really lift the hood up on where VMware is putting their money and their earning their income. It's on NSX, which is software-defined networking. You know, there was a while there would look like the hypervisor was commoditizing and they were going to really just be a management company and they were going to be a cloud management company. And now it looks like really the money coming back is in software-defined storage and software-defined networking. That's kind of echoes of what we were talking about with IBM earlier, because those are infrastructure resources that have been abstracted to run the same on-premise or in the cloud or at the edge and really provide that consistent infrastructure experience across that. So you can see this trend happening in a couple different ways. And if you want to get back to HPE, there's definite advantages they have in networking over the years.
You know, these are big mergers we're discussing here. Let's look at some that are still pretty big, but smaller in relative size. CA with being purchased by Broadcom.
Yeah, there's a couple of really kind of unexplainable deals that happened this year. The Broadcom deal buying CA really, I think, perplexed a lot of people. Mm. When I called up the analyst to do the story a couple of months ago when it happened, I didn't get a clear answer out of anyone, any analyst I spoke with, about what is the end game here? Why are they really doing this? It didn't seem to be a natural fit for either party. And I've been covering CA off and on over the last several years, and they had really gone through great lengths the last 2 or 3 years to reinvent themselves, trying to wean themselves off of legacy software, proprietary legacy mainframe software, which still accounts to this day for something like 52 or 3% of their overall revenues. But what they were doing instead was to veer off into, again, open source land and be more of a platform, a development platform company. And they seem to be marching in the right direction. Then all
they
of a
were still a mainframe company, though. And
the revenue, you can see the revenue shifting, though.
Yeah. Why would HCL buy it? I would think for the mainframe revenues.
Mainframe revenues for now could fund maybe some new projects they want to get done that have nothing to do with mainframe software. But that's not a business of the future. So Broadcom, which is essentially a chip maker, I'm still now, trying to explain this. I can't.
I mean, I the only clues I would have is over the last couple of years, and not terribly recently, really looked at CA. I used to do a lot of system management things, BMC and the CA and HP and Tivoli, right? IBM, the big management companies way back. And they all changed. And I think CA got out of the enterprise market, or fell out of it, in favor of really delivering solutions to service providers and really going to telecom providers and network providers and creating their monitoring and management solutions really sort of morphed into these larger solutions than what an enterprise might even buy, in the sense of what they were trying to cover and the scope they're covering. So if I squinted and looked back at that history, I'd say Broadcom was trying to get into this market where they can sell networking top to bottom, and sell from management monitoring and service desk and things to large service providers, kind of thinking, hey, that's the way the world's going. I'm not going to be selling to data centers anymore. Data centers are shrinking. Service providers are growing. So that's, I think, what they saw in that portfolio.
What's a little weird about that deal, too, is that they were trying to, just before that, to acquire Qualcomm. And the government stepped in and said, no, you can't do that. They had security concerns with a China-based company like that. And so when you think about what they could do with Qualcomm, made a little bit more sense. Well, that fell through, and then very quickly they pivot and buy something like CA, which is a whole different set of strategic initiatives that could be at play there. That further confuses me as to, it's like, okay, we're ready to do something, and that didn't work. Well, we got the money, we're in the mood to buy something. Let's try CA. Mm-hmm. It seems a little bit random to me still, what the purpose of this deal is.
Well, with random as a theme, to close out perhaps, IBM sold notes to HCL, and for a lot of people that's random. Some people don't realize that notes was carrying on, and yet you had recently taken a look at that.
I did. It started off as 2 months ago, I guess I wrote it, and it was to find out where are they now kind of thing. And it made sense in a way to sell it to HCL, because HCL was doing the support for it anyway. But in talking to the three or four of the top executives for that story, it seemed like IBM was really firmly committed to it. Notes has a pretty loyal and larger than you think base. They've got 6 or 7 accounts with licenses for 100,000 licenses each. And that's always been enough to make them mildly profitable. But the last year or so, they've been going out now to try to sell to smaller and medium-sized companies, not just the Fortune 500 or smaller, or bigger rather than that. And they seem to be making progress. The revenues, which they won't break out, they tell me that they were going up. They're pretty optimistic about the future. They're coming out with version 10. Next year, which has a lot of interesting new features, and to continue the theme of Linux, they're going to include for the first time support for the CentOS operating system. That's going to allow them to create Docker containers on premises or in the cloud, including the company's own hosted service. Oh, and they're also integrating pretty consistently notes with a lot of IBM's marketing, communications and collaborations products. And so you would think they were committed to this thing, and then out of nowhere they decide to sell it off. So again, I don't really understand the point there. It seemed to be a part of a larger strategy they had, plus the product itself was doing pretty well.
Well, I covered notes for some sites here at TechTarget, and it's been a long decline. No matter how much you could make sense out of its rapid application development, it's got all sorts of good modern stuff.
And it's got low. They turned it into actually a respectable low code, no code platform.
And then, of course, that's a discussion too.
Yeah.
But it just didn't fit with the larger trends that IBM was pursuing.
Yeah. And Mike, I think there's a lot of commodification of development platforms, platform as a service. You mentioned low code, no code platforms. There's a bunch of them out there. They're competing, and there's now open source challengers to that as well. So I think IBM sat back, much like HP probably did when they got rid of all their software divisions, and said, you know, a lot of what we're trying to differentiate is really becoming table stakes and commodity, or there's open source options. We need to get this off our books and focus on the things where we can really make a difference to people.
Well, Mike Magid from Small World Big Data, and Ed Scannell from Data Center and Virtualization Media Group, thanks for joining me today, and we'd like to wish everyone a happy new year and a prosperous one and a healthy one to all.